Chair, as we are a team, so this is going to be indeed a truly joint effort to ask the questions. Let me start with the two, the Grenvinga and the outside of South Africa, and then I will pause and then ask Naomi, Chair, just to take us through that whole process from start to the end. Because in there, you will see, Chair, some of the questions will get answered, and then we can expand on it so that we just take through the committee members, our process. In terms of, Mr. Atkinson, in terms of Grenvinga project, when is it going to be commissioned? That's a very difficult question to ask. And I will answer it this way. South Africa has committed to take, at least for the first phase, 2,500 megawatts. The intention, at least with the information we have, is that the first phase is supposed to produce about 4,500 megawatts, 4,500. However, if the whole project, the Grenvinga project, is done, that should be about 40,000. I mean, the whole of Eskom is about 42 in terms of capacity. There is Inga 2 and 3 happening now, but the Grenvinga is the big one. Now, where the process is, because it's driven by the government of the Department of Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, sorry. There's a short list of three partners. I think it's consortiums, actually. I think there's one which is with links with, I think it's China, there's one with Americans, and there's one with links with Spanish. So there's three big consortiums. So they need to decide on who is going to be the successful one, because there's certain parts to this. There's the one part where you have to build the basic infrastructure. I mean, what I mean by that, because then they need to raise the wall. Because remember, the process is, here you have a river that is running, the Inga. You want to redirect it. So by doing that, you have to build the channels to redirect that, raise the wall so that the fall, when the fall happens, that's when they run the turbines and all of that. So that's the basic infrastructure, the first part. But then you need turbines and all of that, that's the equipment. And then for South Africa to get the energy, you also need the transmission part. So there's basically two big parts, the generation and the transmission. Now, the decision on whether that's going to be one or two contractors to be made, but that will depend largely on the government of the DRC on that one. Because when that decision is made, one has to look also on the funding of the transmission, because it's thousands of kilometers from the DRC to South Africa, but also what that means to the countries in which the energy will be passing, in Zambia, for example, and Zimbabwe. Zambia and Zimbabwe. So do they get the energy and all of it? So all of that, that's why I'm saying the question of when. In terms of, I think, the initial plans we had, I think we thought 2021, the commissioning should be happening. But it will depend on that. I think when the project happens, the impact will be massive. In fact, last week, IDC met with one of the shortlisted consortiums to see areas of which we can cooperate where and whatever. And I think there is progress that has been made, but it's not at the speed one would have expected that it should be. And also it's going to be a massive project. The other people think they can do the first phase. They won't necessarily have to do 4,500. They can do a bit more than that, because of other technologies. But I think once the government of the DRC has made that decision, that will help. In South Africa, the entity that is central, that is leading, is the Development Bank of South Africa. So ourselves, IDC, together with PIC we would work, because we also want to see how at the back of this can we also get our South African companies to participate in the, either providing, I'm sure there will be steel or whatever that will be needed, so we'll have to unpack all of that. So this is where we are as far as that is concerned. So maybe 2021, but I don't want the committee to say, I said 2021, and starting 2019, it happens, that would be great, but if it's 2025, it doesn't. But that's the thing. I think the potential is there because it's cleaner one, but I think it will take a little bit more. And I would like to believe, I think maybe the people who are best placed to can answer that is the Department of Energy, in terms of the integrated resource plan. When is the timing, because I don't have that information, of them plugging the Inga resource into our resource pool, because I think that is also important. So I think that's all I can say for now on Inga, Chair. In terms of the investments outside of South Africa, in the plan, David showed 10%. As we implement, in fact, 10% is what we've exposed. I think if you include the commitment, because there are some projects that we've committed, I think that figure is slightly more. It's probably 12 to 13%. With the Evolve project, where it also talks about regional integration, the intention is that that will increase. Naturally, I mean, South Africa is our base. We'll still do more in South Africa. But you'll find that that will increase over time, particularly because some of the investments that we make in the continent are infrastructure type investments themselves, so they tend to be large in their nature. For an example, this year, which we're reporting, which will come back, I think, towards the end of the year when we put in the results, JUC. We approved a cement plant in Mozambique. That's at the back of two other cement plants which we had approved already previously. There's one in Namibia and there's one in Ethiopia, for example, which in fact were in the process of being bought out on that one. But also there's been a number of other investments in tourism. I will talk about, I think the chair asked the question about tourism in particular. And in tourism, but also in agro-processing. Now, when you look in terms of which country benefits most from our exposure to date, it's Mozambique. And I think largely it has been because, one, we had one large historical investment, the Mozala aluminum smelter. But even if you check that out, there's a number of projects. There's a number of on the agro processing. There's a number on tourism side, and then this cement plant. But I think it's largely been because of the proximity more than anything. But if you look into the other countries, we're looking at the mining projects as well. But I think the one that I think the most recent one of scale has been the cement plant. There's two hotels which we had funded. It has taken a bit of a while for us to complete those, because as we invested, we actually discovered, we're also learning as well. In fact, maybe that leads me to the question the chair asked, maybe the one part of it, in terms of our investment in tourism, particularly outside of the country. Are we taking the same old culprits, I'm using culprits loosely, chair, or are we giving opportunity for South African companies to be present in the rest of the continent? From the investments we've made, the reality is we've been reactive, in the sense that entrepreneurs in those countries have approached IDC to say, we want to develop a hotel, and then our approach would have been, And they would say, okay, we want to develop a hotel, but also we want to procure from South Africa some goods and services. And then we'd say, who are the operators? And then they preferred known names for the ones that we've done. And the reason for that was for them, a number of tourists who would have used those facilities wanted a brand that they can relate to. But that does not mean ourselves as IDC, and I would like to believe as we look at Evolve, we need to change that thinking to say now let the operators also be South African entities, not necessarily the ones that are there. What we've always said to our South African entities was to say, as you go into the continent, come with us, we will assist. But I must say, in the hotel industry, we have not done. In fact, we have only done about of scale 2, and then we have, I think, about 3 in Mozambique, but those are smaller sites. But it's not any of the... It is South African companies, but it's not the empowered ones and the smaller. So, but there's an opportunity for us to do that. What we've insisted on, though, is that when we fund either the furniture or some of the material that they use so that we have some link with South Africa. But as David said, with the Evolve approach, it is for us now to say, when we talk about regional integration, how do we link it even much better? A good example for me would be, for example, if we're looking at a textile industry, we might say, which country best produces cotton? And we might say, competitively, right quality, we might just say Mali is the best. Okay, so maybe what you do then is they grow it there, they spin it, it comes to South Africa, then you make yarn, for an example. So, but we have to look at thinking like that, so that it's a proactive approach now, rather than to say somebody just comes and then we just respond to it. That's the whole idea of trying to think. I think there's an admission chair to say we have funded some hotels, granted, but we have not really pushed in, particularly the empowered ones. There's an opportunity for us to do that. Maybe let me just complete the tourism, and then I'll ask Naomi then just to take us through the process. The observation, Chair, is that there is an element of saturation. I think you're right, particularly in some of the smaller. I mean, we saw when 2010 World Cup came, there were a number of these establishments that came in. And the reality is some of them did not make the money that they thought, and then we saw some of them not performing. We also did fund some B&Bs, and some of them really did not make money. We also funded some hotels, both boutique and some of the large ones, and some of them have performed indifferently in different parts. So that has been. And as a result, you will see our investments going forward in the tourism space. It's largely, in South Africa at least, it's not the hotels themselves, the buildings. But outside of South Africa, there's still a lot of opportunity, particularly the back of development, you know, when there's mines. I mean, if you look in the DRC, for an example, Katanga province and all of that, the accommodation is still there. So opportunities are there. So you can still build in the brick and mortar. Now, in South Africa, we're trying to find different types of tourism and recreation types that we can fund so that we can attract. I saw on TV the other time, in the Free State, for an example, they're having these extreme sports, which is something that we've also funded to try and build. Because we are aware that there has been elements of saturation in terms of the actual physical structures. In the boutique, the question was also, are we seeing any previously disadvantaged players, particularly in the boutique? Transformation is not at the level where it should be. In most of the projects that we have, there is an element of empowerment, but it does not necessarily mean there is a control. We have some examples. For an example, I think we did share last time in the Mpompo. I think we had some examples. I mean, maybe David, you can just check in some of our previous slides. We have some examples which we've shown. Some of the boutique-type establishments which are doing well. I mean, I think we said there were 2 or 3 last time. but it's not widespread as it is. And I think the issue of transformation is still an opportunity that must be explored, particularly in the tourism. We have, when you look at some of the game establishments which are in the game parks and all of those, in some of the ones that we funded, there is communities that are playing a role, so we are partners in those. Some of them have been successful, some of them have not been. I mean, I remember there was one project we did which was a very painful one for us in Numbi Gate, where we partnered with a community, but we just partnered with the wrong entrepreneur, and they were just really taking the community for a ride. We had to get him arrested and all of it was a bit of a messy exercise. So whenever we engage communities, we try and also make sure that we put in some structures like community trust so that we can try and assist. Because there is an opportunity. I mean, some of the people have been living off those establishments, and all they know is that, and we should at the back of it. But there's still room for us to improve on the tourism. We like it because it creates a lot of employment. And it's not only the people visiting, but some of the services that are supported. It also works well with the movie industry, for an example. When people come in here, our funding is not only that we're funding a movie itself, but they're spent locally. So that's why when we participate in funding local films, at least those that are produced in South Africa, we insist that our money is spent in South Africa, so that then people can stay in hotels, people can buy food and whatever, and use some of the actors and all of that. So that's where the tourism part also comes in quite well. Chair, let me ask.
Okay. I want a follow up on that. You know, you've mentioned that a lot of people, I would take it even women, during 2010 and just before 2010, they were interested in the BNB businesses. Some, yes, were successful, some were not successful. But what I want to find out is, what is the role of IDC in developing such, even further? Because some might have wanted just to get money and go. Some would have wanted to, you know, to be established and continue, but they lack some kind of necessary skills, especially the older generation were in the, which find it a bit difficult to go on a course and do the course and so forth. I just want to check, because IDC is also on about development and support. You talked earlier about the tree support. I just want to understand, what exactly are you doing to that regard, so that kind of the support you are offering is also aimed at sustaining some businesses and even advising for those businesses to match in order to be, you know, to gain. I mean, we met the way to the Umem Ulindi with us. She was emphasizing, actually she told us that a story of how she started and how she went about, you know, it was not an easy thing. I can imagine a woman of her caliber with those qualifications and with those with the kind of experience she had and still couldn't make it, you know, from the start. And she's still struggling. It's not that she has, you know, arrived. She's still struggling. What about the poor woman who wants to really, she sees that she has the passion, but she doesn't have the kind of knowledge and skill that people like Moses Lindu. Through, maybe because Sifa is there with you, maybe you'd want to come up with a different approach wherein you would support from the beginning up to where you feel that really this is an established, and maybe encourage them even to go bigger into boutiques and hotel industry. I just want to see, what are you planning in that regard, so that it's not just about financing as per a business plan, and after failure you disappear. I just want a situation where you see. This could be an example of an industry, but what is happening all around? This is my question.
Chair, thank you for that. That's a very difficult question, Chair. Because one always tries, I think when Naomi takes us through the process, Chair, and hopefully also Refilio from Workout takes us through what they do, maybe it will give a bit of some sense. But I don't think even with their input they will give maybe a comprehensive answer. Because what we try and do, Chair, is to support ourselves. And where we identify that they lack something, try and partner them with some people. But one needs to be a little bit careful, because we don't want to force people to work with some people. Sometimes the chemistry is just not there. But also, some people might be in the same competing space. So, for an example, in the case of Cislinde, it was a protein. It was a Soviet protein, yes, I remember when we started. And we thought, in fact, because we had said, okay, we know you've got the experience and the expertise, but let's bring in a known brand, because people would know it, and then it's an established. So, in that process, at the beginning, it sounded like it was going to work. But truth be told, coaches, but also other things that they are worried about. Now, suddenly, the support, the extent of the support one was thinking would come from them was not necessarily to that same level. And when the occupancies were not at the level where they wanted, they didn't have the patience that we had, which is why then that relationship had to be separated, it has to be rebranded, and then... And then it went to Workout, which is where Refilio is. That's why we have that IC unit. And from that, then we try to find who else can you partner with. And I think because we had that relationship with Benchmore, I think in her particular example, we did it. So we have a unit which has a little bit of patience, but it will depend on each one. It's a difficult one, particularly for people who come in. But maybe let me pause and give Naomi just to take us through the process, Chair, and then maybe we can come back and revisit this, because I think what you've highlighted, because the reality is there are some people who've got these establishments but they're not seeing people coming, and people have put in their pensions and everything, and really we're all battling to say what next, what can they do. I know in the past we tried to club them during the World Cup to say, okay, use the central reservation as a certain one, so that, because the other thing is just access, try and partner. Sometimes it has worked, sometimes it hasn't worked. But maybe, Naomi, do you want to take us through the process?
Thank you, Chair. in realizing the time it used to take for the IBC to assess the applications that came through, the regional offices and the pre-investment business center was set up to be the face of the IBC and to fast-track that process so that the account managers within those departments would look at this application and make sure that by the time it gets to a due diligence stage, it's ready. And the due diligence team will only focus on the critical areas to address before submitting it. Now, how the process works is... we have a pre-investment business center where applicants can walk in and apply for funding, and there will be a person who will walk down and meet with the applicant and see them at the IBC, help them with the application, and ensure that that application is logged. We also have established an online application system where applicants can now log, you know, their business plans online, and what we have done is within immediately when the application is logged, it's registered, the entrepreneur will receive an SMS notification confirming that we have received your application. Within 48 hours, a letter of acknowledgement indicating the necessary information required is sent to the applicant. Now, the depending on the type of entrepreneur or the type of client we get, if we have all the information here that is necessary for us to conduct a business, a basic assessment, which is where we look at the requirements, what the client requires, how much they require, and also which unit or business unit it fits into. If we have all that information within a period of a week to 10 days, that application goes through to the business unit, which are the people who will conduct the due diligence, and that's where the 17 days comes in. When they receive that application, which has been completed by us, then that due diligence will commence, and within that period, the approval will happen. Now, there are instances, Chair, that we need to highlight where we get entrepreneurs, as you had indicated, that don't necessarily have the experience. They have the idea, they have the passion, but they don't know how to put together a business plan. Now, this is when there could be time, it could take time for us to get the information required. Now, in instances where we do not get this information, we have established a business support department where we have qualified, experienced consultants that will help the applicants with their business plans. So that when they come to us, they are ready for processing. So that could be a period where it could take time for us to get the required and necessary information. When the application has been submitted for due diligence and it has been approved, we then go through to the post-investment phase. This is when we disburse the funds, because we do realize that there are, you know, the deal makers that conduct the due diligence and send the report for approval to alleviate that weight, that what we call cradle to grave, where they live with the application from beginning until the end. It places a restriction on them to then be able to facilitate more deals. So we established a post-investment department. This department facilitates the disbursement and the monitoring of these clients. And the monitoring involves going through with the client through what is required for them to be able to get the fund, which is the disbursement. So if I can just, you know, take a step back, Chair, to say, as soon as the application has been approved, the client will get also a letter to indicate that the application has been approved. This is what you require in order for us to then disburse, which are conditions that we place. You know, those conditions could include securities that we need to register, but it needs to be borne in mind that these conditions would have been negotiated with the clients before submission in order to avoid the issue of going to and fro with the client. Once the funds have been disbursed, this is when the monitoring happens, where we monitor the performance of the client via visits. We visit our clients annually, and what we have done also is we categorize the clients according to the risk profile. So clients that are riskier will be visited more than once, but not only physical visits, we also utilize our regional offices to also visit those clients, but also by submission of their financial information. And what we have noted with clients that struggle to provide this information, we provide financial assistance through grants, also through the business support. So the business support comes in pre- and post-investment, yes. And also we monitor the you know, whether they comply with the legislation, whether they pay their employees, you know, according to the required legislations, and whether they comply to environmental legislation. So this is where, you know, because we don't want to just give money and send back. We want to help our clients become experienced entrepreneurs, but also to know how to manage their businesses. Clients that experience challenges or difficulties, and as a development finance institution, we establish the workout department that will take them through the process, as opposed to shutting them down. We'll take them through the process where we could give them extra time, which is called a moratorium. It could give them extra time to repay. We give them a break in terms of payment, just so they can generate enough revenues. And our workout department has got experts, individuals that can assist in turning around these businesses. That process also takes time because there could be different reasons why the client is struggling. It could be market conditions. It could be even the entrepreneurs themselves. It could be staff issues, labor issues that we have seen with the strike. So we are always cognizant of what is going on in the market and provide the necessary assistance to our clients in that regard.
Maybe just to complete, I would ask you to fill it just on the workout, and then we can go to other questions.
Okay. Chair, for you. The role of workout normally comes in when a client is in distress. I think it talks to the support that we give to those businesses that are struggling, and we still believe that they have potential. And I think the most important thing here is we have to assess if the business is still viable. Because there might be instances where a client comes to work out, and after a basic assessment, we believe that the concept would not take off or the business model has kind of fallen back. But where the client shows viability, work out and restructuring would then positively engage with the client to help them turn around the business. The role that we play also looks at putting additional funding if the client needs money to grow the business. It looks at if the client, for instance, I think there was a question around whether we offer assistance with financial management and things like those. There are instances where you go back and you find that the client has been struggling. You know, they don't have the right capacity, management don't understand how to do certain functions. We then rope in our business support unit where we would then engage in terms of trying to strengthen up the business either by providing a consultant who will help with bringing the information up to date as well as capacitating management by transferring skills. And we also then would look at things like, how do we help the client to navigate the market? And I think this then talks to the whole issue around the incubation program. At the IDC, there isn't any program that we're doing internally. But there are programs that are outside that some of our clients are part of. And there's one example that has actually worked very well. There's a company in Mafikeng that produces toilet paper and toilet rolls, and their biggest client is Pick n Pay. And in a lot of our clients that are in workout, we find that access to market is the biggest hindrance. And we have a small company that is black owned that has managed to get itself on the Pick n Pay incubation program. This person deals directly with Susan Ackerman, who then goes around, facilitates that, we help you to get the right suppliers. Because remember, with the vertical and horizontal integration, it's easy for small players to be excluded. You would have SAPI providing paper to Twin Saver, but you would have nobody providing paper to Holy End because nobody knows about them. But with this kind of incubation program and with that brand like Pick n Pay behind this client, he's able to knock on doors, and Pick n Pay is then able to leverage off its power to say, if you want us to do business with you, then help, to bring up some of the black industrialists that we're trying to build. And that is one of some of the success rate where they have access to market now because they can sell directly to Pick n Pay, and they are able to access supplies because Pick n Pay facilitates that. And I think it's one of the programs that the lady has already met with the CEO, and it's something that we're trying to replicate with some of our clients that are in trouble. So we actually do look beyond just providing money. We do provide support as well.
Chair, maybe just to complete the incubation story, maybe Tami should just complete that. In fact, maybe you will talk about it, Lizo, because there's also a company here in Cape Town, Chichus, where we've partnered. In fact, they've been working very closely with Woolworths. I think, yeah, we showed that. And that is also another type of incubation which we've seen work. In fact, that's the approach that we're also taking to some of the textile companies. Some of the textile companies, where David did say that we've seen some change, and that change has happened when you've tried to partner them with the market, because the issue has been in most cases, is access to market. Because people know how to manufacture goods, and they can get the quality. They'll do it wrong once or twice, but they'll get the quality right. But then nobody buys it. So, and that's one of the other things what we want to see private sector coming. Maybe, Tammy, just complete that, and then we can go to the other side.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The Black Industrial Strategy, as was approved by our board in January 2014, talked to a proactive approach that we wanted to take with some of these entrepreneurs. So in terms of the strategy that relates to the incubation, what we are saying is that we don't want to take a reactive approach and only look at business support or solutions when companies go into distress. We want to, from the beginning, be able to proactively assist these companies to access what we see as challenges within their businesses. And the major one that we've seen is always when they want to expand, for example, where they don't have access to market, as they are always competing with bigger companies within the industries they operate in. So even though we have examples where, for example, in Workout, we have incubation processes that help with companies, we want to expand that to the greater IDC or to the greater business, where from the beginning, when we assess a business, we say, okay, fine, how is this company going to grow going forward, or what are the company strategies? And then we will develop that strategy. Currently, we have not developed that strategy or that policy that says how are we going to do the whole incubation strategy. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, there's a couple of questions. We'll try and
can we check if there are any follow-ups, especially if there were two questions asked answered here. The one on the 17-day, yeah. Are you okay with it? Were you answered? Because I thought she, Naomi, did talk to that. You're fine with that, no? Okay, Mr. Mara?
I don't think mine was answered yet. Sorry. Okay, you covered.
Oh, you covered.
I'm not covered. The answer's not been, the question's not been
answered. No, I mean
yet.
On this particular issue. Okay. But I just wanted to find out also on this, the pre and post support. What's the success rate, for instance? And if you can share with us, for instance, those that you've put under incubation, how many of them were successful? If no, maybe you should just talk of rate, success rate. Because if I were to ask how many it's going to take long, you'll have to go back to check how many are there. Yes. How's the success rate? And is the incubation approach that you've taken working so far, if you're talking to that? And because you are approaching your market access challenge with the incubation approach. That's what you are doing. And I asked a question earlier on whether this is the only viable option that you have, or there are other options that you thought of. But by the way you are approaching it, or you've been talking, it seems like this is the only viable option that you have. I'm not sure whether I'm losing anything here. Yeah. That's what we really want to check, so that we can be able to assist from outside. But I'm happy that you didn't only focus on tourism issues, you also went beyond that. And remember, you had also the issue around, FOCO? What is it? FOSCO, yes. Yes. you're having such challenges also related to the access to market. That's in your stretch plan. Okay.
No, thanks, Chair. I think in terms of the steps, we can go back. I think as Tammy has said, I think the approach, we're only referring to it now as incubation, but the approach has been to provide support pre and post. So we have not really formally said this is business, this is incubation. So we're only doing it now. And the approach, in fact, what we've said is we would say, what does this business need as help? And in most cases, it's been really the key one has been market, particularly the startups, because then, I mean, there's always this risk that is inherent when you start a business. You will rely on one key client. So if the client dies, you die with it. If the client, there's problems, can't pay, and that's a problem. But then we say, what else can we bring in? That's why we do like a diagnostic to say, what does this need? And then we would look at it. If it needs just financial assistance, then that's why I think Naomi referred to consultants. That's why then we would, because we have a list, I think I will come back, I think there's a question on consultants. Then there was a list of service providers to say, okay, these people are good in financial, they can help provide financial support. Or in some instances, we think, okay, there are some people who might have developed the marketing abilities and they need to help on the marketing. So we'll do a diagnostic and then we'll help. But having said that, most of those have been on the marketing access. But we can go back and do the steps, because the bulk of those has actually been in the textile industry, strangely, as opposed to, because we've invested about over 2.5 billion rand in textiles, as I just in the life of it. That's a lot. And we know a lot of that has had difficulties in competing, particularly with imports from Asia, particularly. And we know most of those employ a lot of people. And most of those people ordinarily would have been breadwinners. So one had an option to say, we can close some of these and consolidate. It's not a decision you can just make like that. And we said, what can we do? That's why partnering with the owners of this world and all of, I mean, there's something, it's a bit premature. I mean, hopefully when we come next round and we'll talk about it, there's something we're working with MassMed to try and also try and address something like this. But I think as we, now we mentioned, we're referring to this as incubation, we have to go and work on it. It can't just be market access. It has to be a number of other things. For an example, with the youth, I think David referred to our partnership with NYDA, CIFA, and ourselves. Although the numbers are still relatively small, because we want to bring entrepreneurs, and that's one of the other areas. That's how, in our KPIs, we have that now, because we want to increase that. Because we say there are those under 35s who've run businesses in order to do. That's fine, that's great. Yeah, there are those who want to start, and we're saying, okay, we'll help fund them, but they don't necessarily have to own 100% of the business. In fact, particularly these new ones would prefer have a majority stake, but partner with somebody who's been around, okay, so that then you can have that skills transfer. But we're also very conscious here that we don't want to have a forced arrangement. Because not every forced arrangement, the other guy and he's got his own agendas and whatever. So there's all of that. But we're trying to be mindful of that. But we do take that. I think we will look at the stats here and then we'll give to the committee. Maybe Chair, if with your permission, I'll go through the others, the other members. They've asked a number of questions. One on the source of borrowings. Is there any equity, any funding, and what is the reliance, Mr. Mare? In the funding, IDC is funded, we go out and we borrow. Either in the local market or we borrow from the international development finance institutions. We used to have syndications in the past, but we've repaid all of those, so we don't have any new ones because they just tend to be expensive now. We also borrow from local development, local, I wouldn't say development, but other entities like the unemployment insurance fund, for an example. So there is no equity, so we nobody provides us any equity funding. So all of the money is borrowings. In spite of the fact, you see, Chair, when we come back to present, our balance sheet would have reduced a bit because when we do mark-to-market, some of the listed investments, for example, the Sasol and the Kumba, have had a pullback. But in spite of that, our balance sheet is still relatively strong. At the back of that, we can still raise money, so we can still go out and borrow. Last year, we raised close to 2 billion rands, and we also, in fact, we also have a facility with the Public Investment Commission, PIC, but also with the UIF, as I referred to, but in fact, we've actually repaid the UIF. We're actually talking to them to bring in the new one. The beauty about the UIF, I think I did explain last time I was here, not last time, but I think in one of the interactions we've had, was that the unemployment insurance fund could give us money relatively cheaper, and then we can pass it into the... Because the other challenge which startups experience is the cost of financing. So you're starting a business, if you can have the cost of financing being lower, it helps you to get a bit of it. So that's why we look at entities like the UIF. And in fact, even with the PIC, we have been able to negotiate fairly good rates so that we can pass them into the economy. We had ring-fenced our funds ourselves to try and reduce the cost of funding. So the short answer is no, there's no equity funding, but we fund. So there are normal repayments. We have to repay those. So they take IDC risk. So if the investments don't perform, and then we have to make sure that we find ways in which we repay them. That's why we charge the interest and all of that. So we do rely on these borrowings because as we want to grow, we want to ensure that we grow. But it's important that then we as IDC are indeed sustainable. The question on environment from Mr. Marie David, do you want to talk about it? The environment in which we find ourselves and how do we see it and any competition? And then I'll talk about the sponsorships.
In terms of the environment, part of the process we went through this last year was to look at the sectors in which we want to grow, and that also involved looking at is there a role for a DFI. So we looked at it a bit differently. We didn't say, you know, is there too much competition within this sector, so it's crowded out. You know, there might be sectors where there's a monopoly, but you might see the need for additional competition. So the way we looked at it was to say, is there a role for a DFI and is there a role for IDC? So when we looked at that environment, one, we look at gaps, and I think especially in the new industries, we're looking at where are there gaps where there's a need for new players to start developing new industries. In the established industries, especially, for example, if there's an upstream industry where there's a monopoly or oligopoly, you know, there might actually be a need for additional competition to support the downstream industries, because that's what we're really focusing on, because that's where the job creation can take place. So that's our approach in terms of the environment. It's a bit different to if we were just a private sector player, because we're looking at developing industries and we're looking at developing the downstream.
Chair, coupled to that was, are we having any competition? Are we known in the community? Well, I think that's a link in the communities, and how does that talk to our sponsorships? Because indeed we do have some sponsorships. What we always want to do is to crowd private sector in and other financiers, so we don't want to compete. But what we've also found is when we are in an industry, we've supported it and there's confidence, then the traditional financial players will come in. For an example, I'll give you an example. We went into the table grape industry in the Northern Cape. We started that, we funded that, it was difficult. But once we de-risked it, institutions like Absa, all of them came in. It was good for us. I mean, we then we will step back because we want them to be crowded in. we've seen it now with renewable. When we did round one and two, we funded more equity, we funded more on the when we were funding communities and black economic empowerment players. Now we've seen with round 3.5 and so the pricing in which now the banks and all of that were coming in were a bit much lower. So that means then our role was a bit less than in the past. It's not a bad thing because then at least we've de-risked the industry so we want. So we try not to. In terms of whether we know, and I will ask Liz, of course, he's in the region. He can at least share what we do. That's why we have regional offices. We want to be close to the ground, and then maybe he can maybe share with the committee exactly what we do. Now, in terms of as part of that, it's not only the physical presence, but it's also create awareness. I mean, we do put adverts in national newspapers, but we also want to put in regional so that people know about the IDC. Because I think there's also an observation which was made. In some parts of South Africa, people know very little about IDC. And I think there's a responsibility for us. Because it could be, for us, there's always a worry that somebody might just be having this great idea to change something of significance and maybe come up with this great idea, and if they don't know a development finance institution which should be a little bit more patient than the other, chances are that idea might just die and nobody will be able to. That's why then you will see even Chair, I think there was a reference to say it was 75 years this year, so there are some plans to really try and create awareness. So this institution has been 75 years. You can approach it. These are some of the things that you can do. We try and be careful not to be everything to everybody, because also we don't want people to come and get disappointed. I mean, we said, yeah, we've got funding, whereas now we send them to everywhere else. Also, that also has got its own negative consequences. So, but our sponsorships are very targeted. I mean, we don't just do, I mean, we like to do, try and do something that are more on developing on industries, but we do more on education as well. I think, I mean, relatively speaking, I know we didn't put it here, but I think we can put in some things. In fact, we can show that, in, relatively speaking, how we've invested more in education, because we see that there's a long-term intervention. Maybe, Lisa, you want to talk about what you guys in Jesus?
I think, Chair, I think just to add on what the CEO has done, I think in order to be able to, because the question is our programs are reaching the people on the ground. There's always that question. And in order to do that, I think we started a process of rolling out the satellite offices in order to bring these programs closer to the communities. And in terms of the marketing initiatives, you can talk about probably advertising, the print media. I think we're trying as much as possible, maybe instead of using the mainstream sort of media or newspapers, maybe we focus mainly on community newspapers, because that's where you're going to reach, I think, the masses. I think the sponsorship, rather than going for, I think corporates, they do probably very broad sort of a sponsorship initiatives. But for us, I think any sponsor that we, event that we sponsor is a technical sponsorship. We need to ensure that we will be reaching the target market that is targeted to. I think also we try and collaborate with some other agencies in terms of the NYDA and also CIFA. We started a process where we, rather than IDC having its own sort of an event, we collaborate, we have a collaborative sort of an event where we also, not only with CIFA and NYDA, we also invite other agencies, because there are certain things that probably we don't, we cannot do among the three of us, so we try and involve other agencies. So we are trying all the efforts in order to be able to reach the target market that is out there.
Thanks, Lisa. Maybe just to complete on that, in fact, what we've done, last year, we piloted something which we, in fact, year before last, we piloted which we expanded. We identified a couple of universities and we did what we call business plan competition. So those who are doing MBA. it was firstly to create awareness about IDC, what it does, but secondly also to see whether we can pick up some ideas in that. In fact, this year, or at least last year, overlapping into this year, we extended that. In fact, we coming into energy education where we would identify a couple of projects so that those projects can be able to be funded. So that's another way of really trying to ensure that there is awareness through the partnership with universities. There are other things that we do with universities. For an example, we'll sponsor a chair of this so that we can get access to those. So but those we do, but as Lisa said, those are very targeted. Chair, on the film industry, I think there was a question on the film industry to say, does that promote local culture? I think I spoke about why we do it as far as the tourism side, because it works very well. We funded a lot on the film industry, but it has had mixed results. Some of it has been very great, some of it has been spectacular failures, because you might find the product, a project rather, but the public might not just consume it, because people will not just go and watch the movie. We've done both those that create culture awareness, but also just those that would be action-packed or stories, South African stories. Most of us, we fund South African produced, but in some instances, you would find that there are overseas production companies that come in and want to have their products being developed here in South Africa, so we fund those. In fact, in supporting, in trying to develop that, we funded a studio. I think the Cape Town Film Studio were part of those, but they funded that because that was shot in there. But we've learned, Chair, that is high risk, but we look at the total benefit. I mean, I don't think it's something that we say we will not fund. We just have to make sure that we do it properly, because you can produce a lot of movies. People don't watch them. There's no point. We try and work in some instances with the local broadcaster, both private and public, because they can also use some of that material that they consume. And I'm sure the committee would know that we're one of the key funders for Long Walk, for an example. But there's a number of titles in which we've funded. So we can share, in fact, maybe Tammy, if you can note that, we will share a list of all of those titles. Some of them, committee members would have seen some of them. Not necessarily. I know there's something called the semi-suit. I'm sure Mr. Marais would have heard of it. We funded that. In fact, we made good money from that. We only funded, sadly, Chair, we only funded one Leon Schuster full movie. Only one. But we made good money from that. But as people know, that's probably what South Africa wants. Enjoys.
That's working with, because right now you have I'm just worried because you see, when you look at Nigerian Bollywood films, they developed out of nothing. It's what Member Glenn was talking about. Do you put a particular a concerted effort towards, you know, telling the South African story through film? And when you talk to most of the producers in South Africa, they all tell you the same story, that it's very difficult to produce a film in South Africa. Even where you need 100,000, it's very difficult. And I'm not sure whether you work with Video and Film Foundation in South Africa, or you're working on your own and you are not able to, you know, put up something, a package for the whole country so that it's targeted towards developing this industry. Because I think there's a lot that we can do. We did go to the Cape Town studio. We've seen a lot of people there are for international producers, if I were to put it like that. I'm sort of careful nowadays to use this for anything. But that's the fact. You find that it's said to be previously disadvantaged, you know, targeted, but it's not. The fact is, the people that are there Yes, we want people who are knowledgeable and experienced, but the fact of the matter is we want to see our our youngsters, our people, you know, going through that process. If you were to tell us we have funded John Gunn, you don't see John Gunn in international films, you should see John Gunn in South African films more, because he's one of the experienced people. I would say Lomake, those are the experienced people in South Africa, and we want to see them having their own studio where they would send our youngsters there, refer, so that they also bring about development in our area. I must say that the channel on Zanzi, that's where we see a lot of these movies. But I don't think the quality is that the one that we want to see, because they are quite short. They are not as enticing as we would watch. You know, see many of our people watching the Nigerian movies and so forth. I think it's because they don't have resources to do so. Because they are writers, we have a lot of writers in South Africa, but the problem is that. Are they able then to be produced into films, those stories? Because they are there, we know. So if you can perhaps tell us the plan in a size that is right, and your relationship with the Arts and Culture Department, especially the Film and Video Foundation.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I was too brief. We partner with the Department of Trade and Industry. The Department of Trade and Industry gives incentives, but how they do it, you get paid after you've produced. So what we do is we finance that part. Okay, so that's one part. We also partner with the National Film and Video Foundation, because their key role is on script development. So sometimes even when us as IDC, although we have a unit, we might just want them just to look at the script, because really how the script is developed plays some role in whether this will be accepted by the media or not. So we also do that. We partner with that. As I said, we partner with, although it's been mixed results with both the public broadcaster and the private broadcaster, because you also want them to do what they call pre-sales, because then you can try and do this, you can buy some of these things in advance, so that helps. In fact, most of the other countries, that's what they do. I mean, I'm not sure whether the members have seen, you might have seen something Canada or British or whatever, because they do pre-sales, so they sort of buy, so that's the de-risk some of it. So we also try and do that. We've come up in partnership with the Department of Trade and Industry. We did come up with some schemes so that we can encourage, particularly the first-timers, the producers, because what we've found that has been a problem is black producers, that we don't have as much of them as those. So we have done this. It's not enough, Chair. I do accept and admit. But we are looking at this. We've tried to come up with cheaper ways, schemes, try and do not all of these feature films, because those tend to be very expensive. Do some of the smaller ones, 1 million, 1.5 million, and all of those. We had tried to do something with the national broadcaster, but it failed, because we wanted to do what we call slates, where you can say to somebody, okay, we give you money, you produce 6 of those, and we know chances are only 2 of those will make money, something like that. But we're working with them. I mean, so that's why we came back with DTI, to try and find other things, because. Because as I would repeat, Jay, our approach has not only been just the selling of the film, but it's also the other activities. You give people an opportunity to be actors. Some of those actors will develop, and hopefully you give an opportunity for people to produce, but also post-production, Jay. Because it's not only the shooting. They're actually now making sure that the story is cut well and all of that. There's also an opportunity for that. We've done, I think as a country, we've done fairly well on the animation side, where in fact as IDC, when we funded some of those companies, we've asked them to partner with young and upcoming black people in that space, and that has helped. You will see, Chair, we are more and more now insisting, I think, on your example of getting the black faces in some of these people. We are insisting on those. In fact, there's two movies, and I might be going ahead of myself. I will not mention their names. In fact, I mentioned one, Mandela's Gun. You will see a black leading face there, that's one. But there's another one which is being developed, where we said, if you want access to IDC money, you shall have a lead actor as a South African. I know in the past, the story has been, yeah, this needs to be sold internationally. We need faces, we know, but we need to balance that as well to say as much as well. If it's a South African story, let's also bring in South Africans. So we more and more doing that. We're not at the Nollywood stage yet in terms of numbers, but I think we will need to push. Chair, may I?
Because really, this is about industry development. And if we don't, I just want to need you to understand the package. After partnering with both DCI and the National Film and Video Foundation, just to understand what is your package, what is your target, for instance, for a particular, do you have this 5-year term? And if we have a clue as to, in terms of this industry, this is how much you've packaged for that, so that everybody can plan according to what you have put in place. Because to me, it's more about that more than any other, because that's where we have a potential also to help youngsters while sustaining the already existing one.
Thanks, Chair. In our plan, what we do is we do what we refer to as capital allocation. So in a 5-year plan. So what we, no, in terms of that is the funding. So in terms of that, we've set put in about, I think it's 1 billion on the base case, and I think 1.6 in the stretch case. I think that's the number we have. But there are special schemes that we have in the chair, which I think we will give to the Secretariat so that we can, because there's one which is targeted specifically for producers, because this is where we see black producers, which we can share that. But that was launched by us in the Department of Trade and Industry, because there's a specific amount. I just can't remember what the amount is now, which has been there. But for the 5 years, we're putting at least a billion rand in trying to support this industry. Thanks. Chair, there was a question on whether do we use consultants. Not to run IDC. We don't use consultants to run IDC. But they are, as we said, when we want to provide for support, for an example, I think we've referred to that. There are instances when we look at some of the projects. For an example, let's say we want to fund a mine, for an example. So you need, as part of that project, you would need to do the environmental assessment and all of those. In those instances, you'd want the expertise. I mean, those other people will refer them as consultants. So for those ones, for those specific ones. But not for running the IDC. Except if we wanted specific interventions. For an example, if we wanted to do a change management, we might ask for that. But it's for info. But I mean, we are mindful, I mean, particularly at the back of the Treasury regulation in terms of what you should do and whatever. So we, I think, Chair can give the committee assurance that we are one of those entities that are following those Treasury regulations like a Bible. There was a question, Chair, on employee demographics. I think in terms of female and male, the split is almost 50-50. Chair. The other stats on youth, we don't have. We can provide those. I don't have it here. One area which is low is people with disabilities. I think we have probably about 1%, just about. Even in terms of our equity plans, I mean, that's one area which we're looking at trying to see how we can what we can improve. And then on the jobs, David, you will talk about that. To say, I mean, the jobs that are they really present? And then the examples we provided examples. As I know they had it happens to be only in 4 provinces. In fact, until you asked the question, I did not actually notice. It does not mean that the other provinces didn't have anything. In fact, Tami, maybe can give us a little bit of the stats. Tami.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So from what we've done in the past year, we have, in terms of what we've approved per province, we have put in about 6% of our total approvals in the Eastern Cape, 5% in the Free State, 31% in Gauteng, 6% in KZN, 3% in Limpopo, 4% in Mpumalanga, Northwest 2%, Northern Cape 21%, that would be the renewables mostly, and then Western Cape 11%, and the rest of the continent 11%. Thank you.
Chair, what we will do is when we come back for reporting, because remember there's a time where we have to say this is how we've done. Then we will unpack those, we will come with graphs that show all of that, and all of us will do that. Yes, when we do the reporting, so we'll come back and we'll unpack, and we can say who actually got this money, the size of it, and which black industries, which youth, and all of those. We can unpack it even more than that.
May I
not
Thank you very much, Chair. On the very same issue, I think this portfolio of provinces, the disbursement, it's not balanced per province. I don't know what causes that, but I think it was part of my questions that I decided to withdraw. The disbursement and the benefit or beneficiaries, it's not balanced per province. And it creates a very, very, very serious issue, because we are talking of a country, but we see only one province that is benefiting. One would be saying, oh, is it because you are based in Gauteng? It's a problem. What is your pledge to balance the province? We cannot have a 31, a 6, and a 1. I mean, it says we are not doing anything. Not because my province is not benefiting, but under South Africa context, you are not balanced. What is the plan of balancing? If those provinces are not coming to you, what is your awareness strategy to reach them? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just one question that I had in terms of your IDC portfolio. I'm looking at the word exposure. Exposure normally refers to your risk exposure in there. Now, on the one hand, you put the exposure at cost, which I interpret that was the money that you've put in at the cost of those projects. But the next one, you said exposure at market value. Now, if that's the risk of at the market value, or is it the investment value at the market value? Because if you interpret those two together with the number of clients, it could have been interpreted as 4% at cost, 5% in terms of clients, but 29% of market value exposure, which might have been interpreted as a negative growth in that investment. Whereas, as if it means your value, your market value that you have, not in terms of exposure, but in terms of your value, then it obviously indicates an improvement at an investment that is actually doing extremely well in Mpumalanga. So I just want to get clarity in terms of what you mean by that, that exposure. Thank you very much, Chair.
Dr. Chen.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not sure if Mr. Greener is under the impression that he may have responded to my other question, because my question mentioned the Inga the project, but yeah, the infrastructure.
No.
It's coming. Oh, okay. I was looking at Mr. Greener. No, I'm sorry to preempt to steal your thunder. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Let's come back to the exposure. The numbers Tami was referring to was for 1 year. Now, So the investment will vary from year to year. Chair, I will answer this question cautiously because we will have time to unpack it in its entirety when we report. Now, Chair, what happens is we make investments either through a loan or we take an equity, so we own a share in an entity. Now, two things can happen. The investment can perform well and we get our money back in the loan. And then, as a result of that, the value of your investment in terms of the share that you have rises. So then, that's why then you would find that there would ordinarily be a difference between the cost of your investment and the market value. Now, it might also happen the opposite, that the investment does not perform. You put in 1 rand and that investment is worth 50 cents. Because it does not perform, there's no market, or just the market, even if there is a market, but the margins are so thin, it doesn't. So that's why you find that there will be a variation between the cost. We show both, Chair, because in terms of our reporting, in terms of international finance reporting standards, at the end of the year, when we come back and we say these are investments, we would have done the net market value. And so that's why we would show the committee that difference. But I take the point here, Chair, that when we go back, in fact, we'll have to go back, David, and actually see how best we present it. Because, for an example, if we go to slide 27, Chair, if you look at the green one, just the green one, at cost is big, is 31, at market value is 15. One might say, you know, but why such a big decrease? But it's not that, but it's because the other one increased drastically, the 29%. So relatively speaking, you might think now Gauteng was sharp, but it hasn't, because relatively Northern Cape has actually grown much bigger. So we need to find, I think it might actually confuse the committee members. We'll find a better way, I think, of trying to demonstrate that, but without confusing the committee members. But I think the point that has been made to say we should improve in other provinces, I think it's a point we can go across. I think that's a point we've always said to the committee, which is why David was excited to bring in a project in the Free State this time around, Chair, because we know in the Free State we've been suffering. There's a concerted effort, committee members, that it's not only, I think one committee member said, it's not only the Golden Triangle that gets this. Every part of South Africa does that. So we are conscious and we take that chair that we will work as much as hard as possible that we indeed spread this case. But maybe let me go back.
The cost of investment, is it at the time of funding, is it only within a particular financial year or it comes a long way? Yeah, if that can also be clear, because in this slide it's not quite clear. It's just tell you as of 2014. Maybe that's where, maybe that's where the confusion is.
Yeah, but see, the way that I interpret this, and my clarity will be appreciated, because the exposure at cost doesn't matter when it occurred. That's the exposure at cost, what the IDC has put in. So, but that's why I'm asking the question, and that's why the next one is a relative. So obviously, but eventually you compare your cost, your percentage, you know, for instance, in a specific province, using Mpumalanga in this case, and you also look at the next page where you look at the number of clients, because there you can also compare the number of clients in terms of the exposure per province, and then you bring in the so-called exposure at market value. But I think it's not exposure at market value, it's the value, market value of your investment, relative speaking, against each other. But somehow you must try to interpret that to see how the one is doing compared to the others. And eventually you must get how you can best invest your money to grow our economy in the different areas. And if there are deviations, then obviously you must go analyze that and say, how best can you apply your money for what we want them to do for the economy of South Africa.
I think that's where you were coming in to clarify. That's how you clarified it. I think we are all okay. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. As I said, I mean, we will put it better next time. Because all, in fact, all of them are relatives, actually. The cost, the market value, and the price are all relatives. But we'll put it even much better, Chair. Because we've done that. In fact, what Mr. Maria said, that's one of the things we used when we went through the value chain to say, when we made those decisions. That at the beginning, David said we had to make decisions to say, okay, in South Africa, which sectors can grow, create jobs, and be sustainable. So we looked at all of those. So we looked at the performance of those sectors vis-a-vis outside of the world, in South Africa, this is the competitiveness and all that. But I think it might cause confusion. We'll find a better way here when we come with the results. Let me quickly answer Mr. Glenn's question on industrial infrastructure in the continent. We, in fact, one good example is we have a project which we approved last year in Zambia. It's a coal mine that will provide coal to generate electricity, as an example. Now, that electricity won't necessarily come to South Africa, but what it will do, it will help Eskom not export some of its electricity there. So those are some of the things that we look at. So there are projects in the infrastructure that we're looking at. There's one which we looked at. It's on the hydro one, which we also looked at. It's in Kenya, I think. So we're actually looking at that one. But that one we might not actually participate. I think that it's fully funded now. That will be fun. But we do look at a number of projects on the infrastructure because we are also aware that one of the reasons why Africa is not processing, particularly on the agricultural products, as much as it can, is because of lack of infrastructure. Because we have to transport some of the produce that we have. So we're looking at it. We know DDSA is good with providing road park infrastructure and all of that. So we partner with them, but we don't get into their space. We just make sure that is there. But we do look at the infrastructure. I know Inga is just but one, but there's a number of others that we do look at. Which is why also we were very eager, and that's why we're doing on the cement plant, because we know you need that cement for the infrastructure that is actually happening. So that's the thinking. Chair, if I can quickly maybe just go through the follow-up question.
No, very quickly, Chair. I think we appreciate the explanation of Mr. Green. But I think what we are trying to do here is to sensitize IDC that as it plans and so on, it must at the same time also continually assess and interrogate material conditions. Because material conditions will then tell you, yes, you've got this vast plan, but come back and focus here. So infrastructure now is very important now. Because you don't do business with your neighbors if you are unable to get there, if they don't communicate, they don't have communication and so on, if they don't have energy, for instance. So I think while we are happy with what IDC is doing, but the issue of infrastructure, especially because they've got it in their plans as well. They've got this thing of infrastructure as being key going forward. But I think they need to come back. It must focus. When you look at this, you must be able to see a lot that they say about this infrastructure development and how they really want to drive it. So that Mr. Dina does not say, let me see, I think there is one in Kenya there, but I'll come back and I'll explain. It must be something that is in his mind because he knows that he'll be able to add a lot of value to the lives of our people if we can push that industrial infrastructure. Thank you, Chair.
I think the message is clear. Thank you, Dr. Dina.
Thanks, Chair. No, it's very clear. I think also when we come back and report, we will do it a bit better. Because we, in fact, I think David did say, Chair, that we house the PICC localization, because if you just remind, one of the areas of focus by EDD is on infrastructure coordination. So we house the localization. So at the back of that, it's not only us just providing infrastructure, it's how can we localize that. So it's also one thing that we
want to come back to us on exactly which, like that is then saying. Yes, we're talking localization, but that could be very broad. What exactly are you doing in terms of localization, and what's your approach and the budget that you've allocated towards that, so that you can be clear as to what exactly are you planning to... No, we know what you're planning to in terms of your stress plan, but then the exact things, implementation program.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me ask David to answer the other so that I can catch a bit of...
Chair, there's a couple of areas. The one was around are we moving into the space of local government in terms of the water issues? The space that we're investigating there is one of the new industry examples, which we're looking at desalination and wastewater recycling. The space we're looking at there is more like opportunities that come out of those processes. So it's not in the sewerage works or water treatment for consumption. It's more about, for example, your acid mine drainage. Treating acid mine drainage and extracting minerals there, which can be used for other industrial purposes. So that's one of the opportunities. The other one is obviously desalination in terms of additional water supply. So we definitely wouldn't be, we'd be partnering with the existing players. We definitely wouldn't be competing with them in that space. Then,
naming the project. I mean, if you say the water waste recycling, obviously this like is doing. Maybe you need to indicate in your document, you know, talk a different language so that you can talk to what you're saying.
Okay. Sure. The other area was the jobs which exist. So IDC does operate in a normally a riskier space. So obviously. We've really heard around our workout and restructuring that they sometimes have to step in to support businesses so that we don't lose the jobs. Because the jobs are a key reason why we invest in those companies in the first place. So we look at our jobs. I showed our KPIs. I mean, the KPIs aren't just measuring our performance. It's about whether we're implementing our strategies. So we use the KPIs to drive our strategic objectives as much as it is to monitor them. So we look at jobs there at the time of investment, which is the jobs expected, but we also look at the actual jobs. So exactly that question we want to answer ourselves. Are the jobs that we expected at the time of investment still there? And then we go back and measure that, and that's also on our long-term objectives. In this current year, what we've also introduced is a new KPI, which is looking at our current business partners in distress. Are they behind? So it's almost like an early warning system so that you can actually monitor and manage those business partners who are in distress. So that's in terms of the jobs. I mean, some of the investments, I should say, I mean, some investments which we invested in a while back have obviously grown. So we might have invested in companies that have since grown exponentially in terms of job creation. So then on the rural areas, you said there appeared to be a mismatch. I think the issue here is really around... Okay. Yes. Look, this is really a function of the sectors that we're investing in. In the last couple of years, what we've seen, and I think that's showing on this if you look at these 5 years, we've had investments, large investments in agro-processing, in the green energy and in mining, which have pushed up our investments in rural areas. So that's what you'll see here. That's why it's a high percentage. In terms of what we define as a rural area, it's about half of the municipalities within South Africa based on the level of urbanization and includes all the rural nodes which were identified by the presidency. So what we also have in terms of encouraging investments in the rural areas, we have a development scorecard which actually gives a benefit on the price for achieving developmental objectives and rural and whether the investment is rural is one of the criteria that we look at. The difference that you see on the in terms of the graph on the left and the one on the right, again, it looks like there's similar amounts, but now you have varying differences in terms of jobs. Again, that's a function of the sectors that you're investing in. So in the last two years, there's a lot of renewable energy there. Where the job creation isn't as great, I mean, but you're trying to achieve industry development objectives. In 2012, there was large exposure in terms of mining and agro, mining. Yeah. So that's where a lot of those jobs come. So there is an explanation behind the shifts.
Chair, maybe a few last questions before I'll give Lwazi. He needed to see. He's the only one who has not said anything, so I think he needs to say something. Chair, on pharmaceuticals, I think the observation was very spot on. Are we doing enough? Are we providing? That's why now with the Evolve, in fact, we have a unit called pharmaceuticals, because that's one part that we want to drive. In the past, we had it as part of health care, and we were funding many things, including the building of private hospitals. But we want to, particularly at the back of what government is procuring on the pharmaceuticals, to say to what extent can we localize and then produce locally some of those. So we have that, and hopefully, Chair, and it's part of the value chains anyway, so hopefully we will be able to do a little bit more than we can. I think the examples where you attended Aspen, I mean, IDC's involvement in Aspen was just to build a warehouse, I think, for them in the Eastern Cape a while ago. I mean, we haven't done anything there. We have funded a couple of other players when they invested in companies like Life Health, for an example. I mean, we funded those. We integrated some of that investment. But also in some of the others which were manufacturing generics. But we, at the back of this, what we're actually doing proactively is to actually say if we don't have the technology, we would want to bring in some of those companies to come and manufacture here. Because if we do it properly, the chances are then we can use South Africa to export into the rest of the continent as well. So that's where this regional integration is. And that's why we're having that. On the chair, you asked on the specific question on Soweto Gold. I've just been checking with our team why it has taken that long. I think it's the issue of, I mean, there's a bit of specific, chair, I won't go to every detail, but it's the issue of either them, that is the players, the Soweto Gold, allowing other shareholders to come in so that they can dilute us. So my team has been telling me that's why it's been, she said, how best to come up with a funding package. We wanted to put in debt. But he said if you put in too much debt, it will not make the company be able to repay the loans, rather bring in some other partner. So that's where the discussion is. There's no meeting of minds yet, but I will follow it up when I go back. I think that's the main reason why we have not been able to do that. And then on the cooperation with the DFI in tourism in Mpumalanga, we do have with MIGA, Chair. This one was just specific because there were three projects which we wanted to ensure that happens. I think the one in Gozo Indo and then the two others. We wanted those to happen. That's why we wanted a partnership with this entity that's on tourism. But we have another one with MIGA. In fact, the gentleman who's now been appointed as the CEO of MIGA, he used to be at IDC a while ago. He used to be at IDC and then he went to CIFA. So we're actually talking with him to say how we can actually revive that, because there's a lot that can still be done in the province. In fact, we have started well, but I think we've lost some momentum, and we want to go back. And
I think what I was trying to push you to do is why are you doing that with the DFI? But you need also to look at the broader picture. That's what I was saying. It's more looking at as ideas, because this is what we're pushing the department to start doing, so that you coordinate more and cooperate more on issues of development in the provinces, rather than selecting certain projects, you know, that the DFIs might have thought of that might not necessarily be within the strategic plan of the province.
Thanks for the change. You know, maybe Lizzo can comment, because what we previously had, Chair, we signed MOUs with economic departments for every province, because in there would have been projects and so I'm saying some of the provinces we've lost the momentum, and that's what we need to go back, particularly when there's been changes, because then you would work with them and you'd want to understand what are the provincial strategies, and at the back of that you say how we can partner. So we used to go and actually, I used to personally go and engage with the whole provincial cabinet and all of that. But there's been changes, but we've also lost momentum, but it's not the province's fault. I mean, you know, also we have to do that. Lisa, do you want to say something? Maybe
give
the chance, Muslim.
Yes, sure. I think, Chair, you're talking about the alignment in terms of the regional offices strategy. Are they aligned to the provincial growth and development plans? I think the answer is yes. I think for us as the region, it is very important that probably I can say that our impact in these provinces is measured by the contribution that we make towards the attainment of these growth and development plan objectives or goals. And if we don't meet that, then there is no impact for the regional offices. Where there is no alignment, it may be in areas that are outside the IDC mandate. For example, if you look at the Western Cape, which is services driven, some of the sectors, growth sectors, maybe financial services, for example, and then IDC is not playing in that space. Right? And also, I think it is very important to know that I think we need to differentiate these provinces in terms of the comparative advantages that they have. For example, if you talk about the Western Cape, you may say that it shows a sort of a revealed comparative advantage in terms of agriculture and agro-processing. So we need to be able to take advantage of this in terms of our strategy with IDC. That should inform our strategy in that particular province. We look at other provinces, we apply the same sort of an approach in order for us. Everything that we do in different provinces, I think it works towards growing the economy, which is the national economy at the end of the day. It's not about just each province.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be having these disparities in terms of your contribution to provinces. That's what, in Western Cape, you might be doing that, aligning those strategies, but surely this is what your documents are telling us in terms of Mpumalanga, Free State, and other rural areas. So that's why we're asking that, so that you have, you just don't concentrate on the developed provinces. You also focus more on those other provinces that are not doing like you're doing in the Western Cape.
I think our CEO is quite renowned for putting us on the spot. I hope it's also an indication of how he sees empowerment. I'll probably just rehash or touch on my interpretation of some of the points that were discussed a little bit earlier on. I was particularly struck by a question that you had raised around the success rate of our post-investment business support. And it got me thinking a little bit better in terms of we need to actually define what is success, and especially in the context of the DFI, specifically the IDC. It's one thing to compare it to the NGO and the commercial banks, but to interrogate this, you understand that the objectives are clearly, in some instances, competing. So when we, as the regional officer at the regional office, when we take, even prior to the application, inquiries, we talk through with the applicant, the potential business partner, all of our requirements, processes, but also in terms of this business plan. I think that you're going to find a professional body on the other side of the line, or when
he receives here at walk-in stage, but that's only a reactive part of our job. When we go proactive, when we engage with the communities on our roadshows, and as Lisa describes a little bit later, you start to appreciate just how much the challenge is with the youth, with black industrialists, with your SMMEs. Unfortunately, and because of a variety of issues, theirs is one, it's a sole trader, it's overly dependent on one individual being the entrepreneur himself. That does take a lot of time in accessing all of the information, and it's also related to education, I guess. I think when we talk about cooperation, as David introduced right at the beginning, from a business plan perspective, we understand that we refer regularly our clients to CIFA if we can't assist from a funding perspective. If they need a business plan to CEDA, we're very well versed at least starting to be that hub and spoke system for the applicants themselves. All the way to workouts and restructuring. My private sector experience, a commercial bank is not going to wait for you to try and recover your money. They'll try and perfect as soon as possible. What the IDC says when we're a long-term partner is exactly that. Any financier is also going to explain to you that the longer you take in trying to recover those assets will influence negatively your impairment rate. So when we talk about how do you measure success, are we talking commercially? Are we talking developmental aspects, i.e. saving of jobs? Those are the questions in which I'm glad that the members have begun to ask.
That's a clear understanding that we have, and I'm very happy that we have such, that we have that in other areas, that kind of clarity from other areas. I think that's what we should begin asking ourselves as ITC, so that we can have a meaningful impact everywhere, not only in the developed provinces, but also in the areas where we're not developed. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, for that input. I think there's only one question in terms of our time here that the Chair has asked, and we left it last because it's a difficult one and we don't have an answer. And that is the DFI review. Chair, we yeah.
I think the our support staff here has done us a little bit of a disservice. We normally take longer with you, we know that. We haven't even dealt with the financial, we just dealt with the non-financial. And we thought we were here for the whole day, but unfortunately the people are supposed to come in at once. We already all, I was going to suggest that because we got another venue at M515, we go there so that we show. You know, you feel this when you get to the debate, because that's where in the report we have to put in all those issues, because if we don't have a clear understanding of where you are and then we don't deal with everything that you brought to us, it becomes a challenge when we have to report and also when we have to go to EPC. So it's very important that we do everything at once. We managed to do the department one, but unfortunately also we haven't. We just dealt with the non-financial aspects of the report. So for us to do justice to you, I thought maybe we should get in and go for lunch now. You pack whatever that you were about to respond to, and then we go and continue. That's why they targeted, they gave us the whole week for committee week, as a committee week, so that we can process everything, including the colleagues, so that we are able to do that. The whole week is a working week for all of us. So can we, I think we might not spend more than an hour or two or so when we come back from lunch. We've organized lunches downstairs, old assembly, a restaurant. for all of us. Can we go there, have lunch, and then proceed straight to my